It's time for the Del Olalea Show
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Now, broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Del Olalea.
When the world was a time of this and that, I was young, didn't know to hold it back. Now we're here in the world, something else. We can leave any day and call for help. We were gods, nobody was above me. The A on my chest like a Dolce. The A on my chest, put your fist up. The A on my chest like a chipmunk. Alvin, Theodore, breathe in, breathe out.
So Sean informed me during the break that the Bucks have signed the other Antetokounmpo to a deal. Alex Antetokounmpo is now on a two-way deal. So we're having a discussion. Of course, we talked last week about the comments of Bobby Marks that don't rule out the Rockets in a potential Giannis trade. And it's not a Giannis trade. Of course, Giannis would like for you to, I think he would prefer to do it for you to do it in the offseason. So you would have enough time to make moves to get his brothers on the team as well. So if you're signing Alex to a two-way deal, which the Bucks are doing, that means you have to get the Nassis on a guaranteed deal, 15th man on the roster. So we're saying Giannis is worth two roster spots, particularly if one of them is for the 15th guy. We all have a, if you watch basketball, there's always a guy who's 15th on the roster who you don't care about, whose name you don't know. You'd be willing to do it. I think, any NBA team would. The Bucks have done it for years now to try to keep him happy. I think anyone's preference would be, hey, do we have to do this high school nonsense to keep you around? And the answer is yes. So just be aware, now that Alex has proven himself, what a word.
Yeah.
Now that Alex has shown himself that or Giannis has told everyone Alex is important enough that you need to keep him around too. At first, for a little while, Alex wasn't important enough to Giannis for this to happen. I don't know if he got someone a new gift.
Yeah, or
now Alex needs to be on Giannis' team too.
Or it's Giannis looked at this year's Bucks and he's like, all right.
What are we doing
here? He can make this team. Like, we're not trying to win a championship here.
Yeah.
Like, we can play a little bit more Giannis ball here. But also, I think it speaks to desperation from the Bucks.
You do anything you can.
Yeah. I feel like this is a move that they are more desperate than they have been in the past to keep Giannis. Therefore, they have to add another brother to their roster. But it is a two-way contract, so he's basically a G leaguer who can get called up. That's essentially what how that works. So it is like a roster spot and a half that you're spending extra on Giannis. Still definitely worth it. But just as I'm Brian Windhorst pointing meme, why would you now go out of your way to sign an extra Antetokounmpo brother a week after there is a Shams report that Giannis actually did want to get traded to the Knicks, but kept it quiet, and it didn't end up going anywhere. And now, extra Antetokounmpo brothers on the team.
Yeah,
interesting.
You see that report that his family, his wife and his kids, allegedly moved back to Greece permanently, to Athens, and Giannis put a statement out in Greek saying, what are you doing putting my kids? Because they kind of publicized where they were living to. And he, as you might imagine, was very upset and talked about, hey, what are you doing? You're putting my kids' lives at risk by publishing this. He didn't refute that they had moved. He was just not happy, and rightfully so, about telling people where they had moved. So I don't know if Giannis and his immediate family, as far as his wife and his kids, are now no longer in Milwaukee. But it would be one of those tea leaves that say, hey, maybe staying in Milwaukee isn't set in stone.
He also said 4 days ago on his reported interest with the Knicks, I believe in my team and my teammates. Now in 6-7 months, I changed my mind. I think that's human too. But that wouldn't exactly be like inspiring a ton of confidence if in your refuting of your interest this offseason, you're like, no, I'm committed. Now, in like 6 months, if I'm not committed, hey, that happens. I just wouldn't be feeling awesome if I was the Bucks.
They won't do it because who would for a 30-year-old? But if they wanted to do a goodbye tour for Giannis this year, get it all off now, because you might as well. You might as well.
Every home game is a Giannis theme night.
It very much feels like we're just counting down before that official request comes through. I don't think it'll happen in season, but the minute their season is over, I feel like we are doing Giannis watch one more time, and this time a real one, because he'll have a list beyond the Knicks, and he'll have a trade request as well. Hey, I gave the Bucks one more year.
Yeah, I think that's what it is. Like, hey, I gave him one more shot, one opportunity. Sees everything they ever want.
And what better way to celebrate your final year than having your brothers around?
Yeah, it's a family affair.
Yeah, just hang out when you're 43 games or so.
Yeah.
And you and Miles Turner can try to carry the Bucks to a 5 seed in the East, I guess.
And Kevin Porter.
You and Miles Turner can try to
starting point guard Kevin Porter Jr. Kyle Kuzma.
Once again, Giannis and Miles Turner can try to carry the Bucks to a 5th seed.
There might be an in-season trade. Just out of...
Superstars generally don't
I understand.
Have that happen.
Yes. Superstars don't...
Unless your name is James Harden.
Superstars aren't also...
Well, to be fair, Kevin Durant did it too. So it happens. Let me take that back. It does happen.
I mean, Carmelo's now like a 15-year-old reference, but Carmelo also did it.
Yeah.
But most superstars also didn't have to play with Kyle Kuzma and Kevin Porter Jr. and Cole Anthony. Cole Anthony being like a key part.
Isn't Gary Trent Jr. still there?
Yeah.
Of the fumbling the ball.
Yes. Bill Buckner, a.k.a. Gary Trent Jr.
They had a couple guys do that. Malik Beasley did that in the playoffs last year, too.
Not great.
Which brought some questions, but he's been cleared, waiting for a team. All right. That's the news. Giannis's brothers are all together.
We ended up actually doing, I don't know, 2/3 of a Giannis segment because his brother got signed basically to a G League team.
We all know what's going to happen here. It's just a matter of time. Yeah. It's just a matter of time. Okay, so we didn't really talk about this game despite you wearing the hat and the shirt. The Longhorns get a big win. We talked about it in terms of Sark needing it and the program needing it. But that's the Longhorn defense I expected in Florida. In Gainesville, I thought I would see that defense, and that defense redeemed itself. Now, they are playing a quarterback who had missed plenty of practice time. There are questions really up until midweek whether John Mathieu would play. And we were having this discussion before this show. Oklahoma should have, beyond the fact, of course, he wasn't good. In fact, he was terrible. But the upside of him not playing, as far as Oklahoma's chances of making the playoff, all the upside was on him just sitting it out. John Mathieu doesn't play. You get beat by Texas.
Yeah.
Okay,
you lost forgiveness.
You had your backup quarterback in. Guy had the dumb issue. The starter did. And your defense probably gives up the same amount of points, because if John Mathieu can throw those awful picks, Hawkins might not have. But even if he did, they couldn't have been as bad as Mathieu's. Mathieu's were terrible.
Yeah, no, Mathieu's intercept, it's actually all three of them were just like 100% on him.
No one else can be blamed.
Either terrible decision or behind, like the third one, he was behind on a crossing route and can't be behind on a crossing route. You throw an interception. So, yeah, I mean, they weren't even like interceptions where you're like, see, that's where the thumb is getting them. They're all like between the ears interceptions.
The one
before halftime.
The one was, before half was
I mean, it
awful.
Ended up not really mattering, but, it was 6-3.
Cost you points,
maybe. At the very least, you're like, okay, 9-3, you're feeling pretty
And who
good.
Knows what that field goal and non-turnover does to the feeling going into the half. Maybe it changes the complexion of the ball game.
Yeah, but instead, second half, it was all Longhorn.
Yeah, just the point of if you go in 9-3, you don't turn the ball over, maybe the emotions of everyone Longhorns and Sooners is different. But instead, the Longhorns felt great about it. They got another stop, and Mathieu, of course, felt terrible. It was just a game where OU's offensive line issues showed themselves again. They have not been able to run the ball in a traditional way. If John Mathieu is not creating offense with his legs, they haven't done much offensively. They're just not good on the O-line. And Texas took full advantage of it. Mathieu looked like a guy, as you said, that was playing dudes in the Mountain West last year. He has had good moments this year, not really consistently as a drop back passer. And when you take his ability, at least I don't even want to say willingness, but his effectiveness running the football, he is not a guy, at least not right now, behind that OU offensive line that's just going to be able to throw the ball, drop back 35 times, 30 times, and go win a game. That's not who he is. That's not who they are offensively. And all credit to Sark and that Texas defense. And, of course, you Weisner got going, run the football.
Yeah,
that
I was going
to say,
there, it was also the best half of Texas football, or Texas offense, for sure, this season, and probably by proxy, Texas football overall. But it's like one thing that we thought for sure wouldn't happen is kind of what happened in the second half, is that Texas's offense kind of got right against Oklahoma. They're able to move them on the line of scrimmage and open up the running game, or get some rushing lanes open for Weisner, and that ended up making overall a much more healthy offensive product, where, you know, Arch's numbers weren't like insane, but he was making the right plays. They're keeping it on third and short, and he can convert on third short and keep drives going, and ended up with the touchdown and that, and some more field goals. And that's about all you needed to win this game.
Yeah. And the Longhorns are back to being ranked in the top 25 after a week out of it. And with Kentucky and Miss State, those are games on the road, but you think you should win those. And that gets you in line to welcome Vanderbilt to Austin on November 11th. So they got a real shot to have a pretty good month of October after the disappointing loss to Florida. And then we'll see where they stand. So good win for them. Oklahoma's not in real deep trouble, except for the fact that their schedule just gets tougher.
But sure, the schedule's always
tough. Always going to be tough. But sure, Texas was the number one team in the country, but we saw some of their flaws. And now Oklahoma has to deal with a gauntlet, which could take them from being a top five team, at least top six at the time they played the Longhorns, to a team, I won't say struggling to make a bowl, but if you look at it, they got to go to South Carolina. Should be a win.
Not easy.
Not easy, but should be a win.
It's about like going at Mississippi State to me.
Yeah,
it's like about even of like, hey, this isn't a walkover team, but you should win.
Yeah, Texas A&M felt that last year where they were in a spot. Now they eventually still had a chance to make the SEC title game, but they're in a spot going pretty good. Marcel Reed, the energy from him being the starter, was there, and then they go into Columbia and get beat. South Carolina just had a bunch of big, fast dudes.
Yeah, last year's South Carolina.
Yeah, it was Lenore Sellers. You had Nicole Harbour. Then they had a tight end who was, Rocket Sanders as well, the running back. They just had guys, and then they jumbo size athletes at A&M.
Kyle Kennard, along with Dylan Stewart. They still have Dylan Stewart, who's awesome. But their defense was also. They lost a lot of that defense, too. So, yeah, that's one where, you know, if you're Oklahoma, you should get that one. But after that.
Yeah, it's home to Ole Miss at Tennessee, who had a hard-fought win over Arkansas, at Alabama, home to Mizzou, home to LSU. That is Oklahoma's close. So, they will certainly be favored in enough games that you would say, okay, that's a bowl team. But if they don't get South Carolina, we talk about tailspins.
Yeah.
You look at the rest of that schedule. They can go from top five, top six in the country to not making a bowl potentially if they don't get the South Carolina game. So they'll be in them. Their defense is really good. I just don't know if they'll have enough offense. And you start looking at the quarterbacks they'll face. Trinidad Chambliss, good player. Joey Aguilar, good player. Ty Simpson, maybe Heisman front runner.
I mean, definitely best quarterback.
Bo Prabula didn't have a great game against Bama, but that's a good young player as far as experience is concerned. And then, of course, Nuss and LSU. And LSU may have one of the best defenses in the country. You can start to question level of opponent, but they continue to get good results defense.
I was thinking more about their offense.
Well, yeah, the offense is a real problem.
If Oklahoma can score 21 points on LSU.
I don't know that the problem is I don't think Oklahoma can.
Yeah, no, that is an issue. Just, we don't need to break down the last game of the season.
No, it's
for
just
Oklahoma,
that.
But that is, it's looking like it's going to be one where it's like,
There's a little, Oklahoma's going to have
that might be
issues,
one where
man.
Like both coaches kind of need the win too.
Yeah. It's almost worse when you start out well and then fall apart. Like Venables, if he was on track to go 7-5, people would be upset. But when you start out the way they did, and the schedule wasn't so tough, the first team you would say was on your level, at least to start the year, was Texas. Michigan, we saw some of their issues at USC. They lose to Texas. That's the first team I would say that they've seen that's on their level talent-wise. And then you have the rest of the schedule. It's going to be real tough for Venables.
Yeah. They'll need to sneak one or two of those. Like, they'll have to beat Mizzou.
Yeah.
And then they'll have to beat someone else.
Yeah, the Mizzou one at home feels...
You got to get that.
Most winnable
if you don't get that one,
out of those ranked
games. We're
talking
7-5.
Yeah. And then Ole Miss, the way they looked against Washington State, maybe that's one you can get. But those are weeks down the line. They got South Carolina coming up next. So... Look, recap, great win for Texas. Needed it desperately.
Yes. And, I think I even said after the Florida win, I was like, Florida loss. I was like, I know, like, you're looking at the schedule and you're just like, man, they really need to beat Oklahoma to avoid, like, a very tough, I mean, not Penn State level where they get fired, but just Penn State level, like, crash out of, like, now you're talking, like, bowl game stuff. If they're 3-3. Now, still technically alive for the college football playoff. Georgia, I wasn't impressed Saturday night.
Yeah, if you missed it.
That's a win.
If you missed it, Auburn was one missed call away from going up 17-0. I was bothered by Sean McDonough's inability to know that the first punch out was the one that dislodged the football. He kept going, it's still in his hand. No, Sean, the ball is loose. Yeah. Now, if you think one of my favorite guys, play-by-play guys. If you think he got in before that punch, like split second before, okay, cool. But stop referencing the ball still in his hand. The ball started moving as soon as the punch. Did he get in the end zone? I think he did. But the fact that, I don't know who it was. Was it McElroy? He was saying, well, they've taken so long, they're probably going to overturn it. I was like, I feel like they've taken so long because they're looking for a reason to overturn it and they can't find it.
To me... I didn't love, like, obviously, I thought that was a touchdown as well. I didn't love how Auburn handled themselves in the face of that adversity.
They did have Georgia on the 1 or 2 yard line and let them off, and they went and scored.
I mean, they
kicked the field goal.
They had like four penalties.
Multiple penalties.
On that
drive. Yeah, they lost all composure.
Yeah, and I think it started with Hugh Freeze losing his composure. Yeah. Then going into halftime, Hugh Freeze and the AD who's on the field yelling at the ref. And then they come out in the second half and have like 40 total yards.
Yeah, it was 10-3 at the half. So
I feel like they let the refs.
So as much as that could have upset them, and it did. You gotta let it go, wash it away, and go. Now this,
especially the leader, like you're the freaking coach of this team. Like I it's actually more excusable if like the players can't let it go, but like the coach, you have to be the one that leads these guys.
And this is coming off the Oklahoma game where Oklahoma hit a guy and that should have not been allowed, and they scored a touchdown off of it. So the whole program feels like the referees are out to get them, and what they saw on Saturday night in their own building didn't help their cause. Neither did Jackson Arnold. Missing guys, throwing the ball in the dirt.
Really,
that's just a whiff at quarterback. And if they had found a better one, Hugh Freeze may be undefeated.
Yeah,
the way the defense has been able to play.
Jackson Arnold, like, more than anything's probably getting Hugh Freeze fired. Just crazy.
Yeah.
Where we were like a year ago with Jackson Arnold was like, hey, pretty talented young guy. We'll see what he does at Oklahoma.
I don't remember exactly how it went, but it didn't feel like Oklahoma people were worried that Dylan Gabriel had left. Like,
no,
you know,
they wanted to open up the job for
Wanted Jackson Arnold to get a chance, and partly why Dylan Gabriel left. And now you see the results. They had to go to John Mateer. Yeah. And you know what? Auburn was like, you know what? Didn't work out there. Let's try him here.
Yeah.
And it's still not working out.
Dylan Gabriel's still the last Oklahoma quarterback to score against Texas, by the way. For people wondering.
Oh, you mean a touchdown?
Yeah.
Yeah. Last two games, what was it, 34-3 and now 23-6?
Yeah.
Touchdownless.
The first game with Brent Venables was also 49-0.
Was that the one where he was on like a third or fourth string quarterback?
Yes.
So he's had bad quarterback luck in this game, I will say. But go recruit a better quarterback as a backup. That might help your
cause. He has also been outscored by 100 in the four games.
It's been ugly. And maybe if Mateer had practiced and hadn't hadn't suffered the hand injury, it might have been different. But we got what we got, and we got a non-competitive Oklahoma team in the second half. As far as their offense, wasn't competitive really throughout. Credit their defense for doing enough to make that a game into the fourth quarter. At some point, you can't hold up anymore when you realize your offense has no shot, even with your starting quarterback. Okay, we'll go to a break with that. 713-780-3776 is the number. And I'm telling you that right now because at 11:30, caller 4 will win a pair of tickets to watch the Cougs versus Arizona. Arizona played a really good game against BYU. They were down, I believe, 14-0, fought back in that game, took a lead. Could not hold off BYU in the fourth quarter. Eventually, that game went to overtime, and they had a chance to win it, or at least tie it in the end zone, and then go for two to possibly win it on fourth down, feed it through a dime. The receiver didn't make the catch in the corner of the end zone, and they lose. So you're going to get a competitive Arizona team in town and go root on your Cougs. So caller 5 at 11:30 wins those Cougs tickets. And if you don't win them from us, and we're going to give you the chance to win them on every show throughout the week, you can also call them at 713-GO-COUGS to get your tickets today or go to uhcougars.com/tickets. Don't miss the pageantry. It's homecoming, the pride and the roar of Cougar Nation. You want to be a part of that. Kickoff is a little bit early. It's going to be at 11 a.m. So if you can make it, call in 713-780-3776 at 11:30. All right, we got a couple more segments to go here. We will be back.
ESPN 97.5.
Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's the Del Olalea Show.
On ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Now back to Del Olalea.
If I remember correctly, the Astros season started with explaining away Christian Walker's lack of productivity with, he's hitting the ball hard though. And we talked about, you know what, I just rather have the ball find a place to land safely than him hitting the ball hard right at people. Well, maybe the Astros took our commentary to heart because they rank last in batting, or at least exit velo, better way to put it. They were the worst team in baseball as far as exit velo is concerned for their lineup. I don't know that that's simply clear from watching, but when you hit as sporadically as they do, I would imagine you're not getting great contact as often as you like. Some of the guys ranked first, no surprise. Jordan Alvarez ranked first in exit velo. And Christian Walker, the aforementioned, was second, then Jesus Sanchez, and then Carlos Correa. So three out of the four were either, three out of the four, and throwing Cam Smith, he was fifth. So as far as the guys who ranked the highest, four of them either joined the team before the season began or in season. So is that part of Alex Cintron's problem? We know the Astros are analytically driven, unless Jeff Bagwell's signing a reliever he shouldn't sign. But for the most part, they're analytically driven. And if they're seeing their exit velo has them the 30th in baseball, that's probably one of the data points beyond not scoring runs, particularly when your lineup was at as healthy as it could be. There are times where this lineup was impotent. That's why Alex Cintron had to go along, and he, along with others, were part of the bloodletting that happened last week. We will see if they – we haven't heard any news or any rumors about hires, but that has to get fixed. Now, I think position coach hires in baseball got to be the least dramatic or fun hiring in all of sports. Like, oh, okay, he hired a pitching – yeah. They hired a pitching coach. They hired a hitting coach. That doesn't rise to the level of my favorite team hiring a killer on the trail a recruiter.
I think you can even tell because when the Astros fired the staff, there wasn't like any of the Astros Twitter people having like, here's some candidates I'd love to see be the next hitting coach for the Astros. There's just
Who do we know? There's no
Garrett.
There's no hitting coach
someone
big
different.
Board for
someone
people.
Different. Yeah, someone different.
Anyone who isn't anyone who wasn't part of the team last year, get that guy on the coaching staff is what people
yeah.
pretty much
and
want.
And I honestly think that that is like a pretty fair way to look at it is to just go, hey, whatever would had been working like. Hadn't been working for a while. Like, how long have they been a pretty bad team with runners in scoring position? Like, how bad have they been, I mean, hitting at home for the last few years? So, obviously, there was some drop-off happening with how they're coaching or how they're, at least the results you're getting from your hitting coaches and your hitting. I think it's fine just to be like, all right, let's just reset it, see what happens.
The Mariners, for comparison, who were always looked at as that soft hitting team who could never put a good lineup together. Now they made multiple acquisitions around the trade deadline to fix that.
Yeah.
They finished eighth, so the disparity is there. Now it got real as far as the standings are concerned. The gap widened as the season closed out, but. For a time there, we know it's back and forth. The Mariners could never overtake the Astros, and then they did. So exit velo wasn't the primary cause for why the Astros aren't playing in the playoffs right now, but it certainly was a problem.
Yeah.
You are as competitive as you were in the division race, in the playoff chase, and finished 30th in that. That's tough.
Yeah. It's how we're talking about the Texans' offensive line this offseason. It's like, ah. If they can just get to merely below average, imagine what the results on this offense will be. That's what you're looking at with the Astros. Of like, man, if they aren't the worst team in baseball at this, like, I mean, they missed the playoff because they lost a game, essentially. They lost one game. That's why they're not in the playoffs.
I'm always going to lean into couldn't handle Nick Kurtz and the A's. That team gave you far more trouble than they should have. And that's one of the reasons. And also, you couldn't handle the best teams in the AL. Those teams all had tiebreakers against you.
Yeah, just beat the Tigers.
Beat
once.
The Tigers one more time. Do that.
Boom. And hey, congrats, you're in.
Yeah. Now, how it would have gone for you, maybe not well, yeah. But at least we would have got the opportunity to see it happen. Instead, we're watching George Springer move to fifth in all-time home runs.
Yeah.
His team lost because the Mariners apparently are just going to do this thing, at least as it stands right now. They win game one of the ALCS in Toronto. They're up 1-0 in that series, and then we've got game one tonight, right, for Brewers-Dodgers?
Tonight, yeah, the NLCS starts tonight. I think
the ALCS.
Game two is this afternoon.
As well, so yeah, we're going to get playoff baseball throughout the afternoon.
Yeah,
there.
4:03 start time for Mariners-Blue Jays.
The Blue Jays remain the less offensive of... You know what? I don't really have real thoughts on the Brewers, to be fair. So, if it's a Brewer...
I can't see an NL Central team.
Still got those memories from the past. Yeah.
Dark. I don't know if they ever played a meaningful game in the NL Central.
I mean, the Astros played a meaningful game in the Brewers' ballpark
at one
point. But as far as playing the Brewers, eh. Wait. I'm not a baseball historian.
The Zambrano game was in.
No, but I mean, the Brewer did the Astros and the Brewers flip at the same time? One in the AL flips to the NL, and then the other.
No, they're in the Central together.
Okay.
For a while.
Didn't remember exactly when all that happened.
I think that was earlier. I forgot when, but that was earlier where Milwaukee flipped.
Yeah. Either way, the Brewers are in the playoffs. The Astros aren't, and
yeah. Wow, we could really get a. I'm rooting for a meteor World Series. I guess we got one last year.
We got one last year and survived it, and so did the two teams because no meteor hit. But I don't know that Dodgers Mariners. If we couldn't get one for Dodgers Yankees, I don't think we're getting one for Dodgers.
A meteor?
Yeah. If we didn't get that meteor,
like statistically, it's pretty unlikely.
Yeah.
I feel like we'd already start hearing about it, at least in the movies, like.
Yeah, that's true.
They always have a month or so.
That's true.
Run time to train oil drillers to be
astronauts. It always leaks before they want it to.
Yes.
They kept that information tight when a meteor...
Someone with a telescope at their house realizes it, and then, yeah.
Yeah, Frodo saw it first. Elijah Wood, Deep Impact, if you haven't seen that movie. The better of the two at least in my eyes, the better the two asteroid meteors going to hit Earth movies that came out at about the same time. Deep Impact over Armageddon.
Yeah. I just like – I like the Michael Bay-ness of
– I get it. Don't, yeah. And you don't want to miss a thing.
Understood. Yeah, it's a ridiculous movie. Yeah, yeah. But in the movie, they talk about how ridiculous of a plot this is.
Oh, yeah. You mean it's easier to teach oil drillers to be astronauts than astronauts to be oil drillers?
Yep, that's
yep,
what we're
that's right. We're going to have –
watch this. Bruce Willis is going to teach these NASA eggheads a thing or two about oil drilling.
That's right. Because they couldn't figure it out. Steve Buscemi's involved as well.
Yeah.
And of course,
it's a great crew.
Bruce Willis makes the ultimate sacrifice. And instead of having Ben Affleck, this movie's like 30 years old. maybe 27. I don't remember exactly when it came out. But Ben Affleck's dating his daughter. So, of course, he takes the bum into the deal and lets them live their life together. And of course, if we go by Ben Affleck's actual life, those two wouldn't be together past year two.
Well, no, yes, they wouldn't be together, but then they would rekindle it like three more times.
Well, was her name Jennifer?
In the movie, I don't.
If her name wasn't Jennifer in the movie, then no, because no matter what, if it's a Jennifer, then there's a real chance he'll try to do that.
Circle the block.
Yeah. So what if Ana de Armas is in the middle of this? Jennifer Lopez or Jennifer Garner's waiting for me. Let me make a move.
No, her name is Grace. No, wouldn't have worked out.
Nah, it wouldn't have worked out. And he certainly wouldn't have gone back, tried it all over again. But Teo Leone, Morgan Freeman, and Elijah Wood, the stars of Deep Impact. I'm telling you, the science was much better, Sean.
I'm sure. No, I'm 100% sure.
All they did was send astronauts up there.
I'm sure it was more like, yeah, you nod your head along being like, this makes sense.
Well, it's all scientific mumbo-jumbo.
At any point did when the astronauts go, and this is a quote from the movie, space insane or whatever, space mad?
I do not believe at any point.
That happened to a cosmonaut.
Don't believe at any point the term space mad was used.
Okay.
About.
That's a difference between Armageddon and Deep Impact.
One of the differences. Problem with Deep Impact is they tried to weave in a father-daughter complicated relationship thing, and no one was looking for that. Just give me
asteroids, please.
And Morgan Freeman being president. That's all we're looking for.
We need to go back to disaster movies with an ensemble cast.
Yeah, well, like, your guy is always in them, but it's not really an ensemble. Your guy, Gerard Butler, is always in them.
Yeah, I mean, he's doing the best. I guess we need big budget. We need bigger budget for Gerard Butler to save the day. And maybe save his marriage.
Who's he with?
Probably not.
Is he with the... what's her name? Morena... I forgot her name. She was Deadpool's girlfriend. Morena Baccarin. Isn't she in one of Gerard Butler's disaster movies?
Yeah, Greenland.
Greenland. Greenland 2's coming out.
Yeah.
Because we needed another one.
We did.
You did. You were very excited about it. I was trying to think, how much money did Greenland make that they needed to make another one?
I forgot when the first one came out.
It got a good review. It got good reviews from Rotten
Tomatoes.
It might have
been straight to streaming.
Give your guy some credit. It went to the movie theaters.
Okay.
It made $52.3 million on a $35 million budget. So they said, let's do it again.
Boom.
I'm going to feel...
The land isn't the only thing that's green.
That's terrible. I'm going to say they're going to regret Greenland 2 making it.
Nah.
No one has any appetite for it again except
they'll
for
make,
you.
I was going to say,
think it's going to make their money?
They'll make
back?
$15 at the very
At least.
Pencil that. Wait, do they get concessions? Because they might be like $20.
I don't know how the deals work. You will watch it.
Yeah, I'll be there with the Coca-Cola Icy in my hand being like, Gerard Butler. Maybe a cherry icy. I don't know. I kind of.
You
whatever I'm feeling.
Depending on. Either way, you're going to have a chance to watch your boy, Gerard Butler, in Greenland 2.
Yeah. He said it. He said the name of the movie.
That's part of his bag, too. All right. We'll go to break with that. If you've got disaster movies that you feel are underrated and maybe were overshadowed by the big budget Michael Bay movie, you can call in 713-780-3776. But before we do that, I want to talk to you about Monument Chevrolet. Simply put, when you're in business for over 50 years, there's no question about the job you're doing. You're doing a great job getting people in great vehicles and giving them great service. And that's all part of what Monument Chevrolet is about. Of course, the cars are the stars. If you want a Blazer or a Silverado or tracks or maybe from their EV selection. They're all there for you. But the thing that should be remembered is you're not just going to get a great car. You're going to deal with great people. They're going to make sure as their goal, they want to reach it of getting you into a great car at a great price. There are not going to be any tricks. Whatever price you see at mindmechevrolet.com is going to be the price you see what you get on out there. They're not tricking you into coming up or going out to the lot in Pasadena off of Beltway 8 and 225 and then giving you a different price. That's not how they operate. You don't operate like that when you're serving the community for as long as I have. So no matter the car, no matter the price, the great service will be there. And this week, EV vehicles are what they're featuring. So if you want that, an Equinox, which is spacious, got that great interior and that clean, modern design, or maybe you're looking for the EV Blazer, which is speed, which features speed and it's more of a sporty styling, it's all there for you. Check out the make and model you want at MonumentChevrolet.com. Head on out there to Pasadena off of Beltway 8 and 225. Meet the great salespeople and pick a car that you are going to love. That's Monument Chevrolet. And as always, Chevrolet, together let's drive.
ESPN 97.5.
The Del Olaleo Show continues
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's your host, Del Olaleo.
It's something short, so we don't have to play it. But during John Mateer's warm-up, as he was getting ready to take on Texas, one Booger McFarland chimed in with, "That's a thumb and a hand I would be looking to step on." He said it on TV. Now, do I think that's abnormal for a defensive lineman to think, if I know the quarterback's hurt, let me try to exacerbate it? I just think Booger said something, said the quiet part out loud.
Yeah.
Some things you just keep internally. We know as a ex-player, you probably tried it at some point. But Booger, you're on a big-ass broadcast.
Yeah, it's a little bit of like, Booger, most people tuning in on ABC, like, they don't know the real stuff about football. you know, like, it's just like, huh, you shouldn't say that. It's like, that's pretty tame as far as like what happens, what gets said or even thought, I'd say.
Good old Greg Williams, affect the head.
Yeah, just like that. And this isn't even like affect the head. Like this isn't like bounty stuff. This is just, hey, I know a guy's hurt. Maybe I go after him. That's it.
And this is why we get all the duplicitousness from coaches when they don't want to tell you anything.
Because yeah.
they are fearful of the defensive lineman or whoever it is attacking the injury of one of your more important players. You know, that's a hand I'd be looking to step on.
That's a hand I'd be looking to step on.
Got it.
I mean, I know. We know. Every time he got tackled, they would replay it and essentially, like, look at his hand and see, like, did he get hit in the hand?
Yeah, and he himself on, I don't know how much he could, how often he could do it, because over the course of the game, you're just going to be hitting the ground enough.
Oh, yeah.
He was like trying to keep his hand off the ground even when he went to the ground.
Like where he would get tackled, like on his left side, he would get tackled, be going down, and so his right side's going to hit first. And he would like try to move it towards like elbow would land before his thumb.
So I get the gamer aspect of it, but if that is something you are concerned with, I don't know how you play quarterback, and he didn't play that at a high level, when you are actively trying to fall the right way so as not to exacerbate the injury. He appeared to come out of the game fine as far as health-wise, and if he didn't, they certainly wouldn't tell us. But the play itself, if your mind is on that, maybe your mind isn't on the right thing and you don't
play. Yeah, it's just like that 1% of like thinking about how much your thumb hurts, which I'm sure it did hurt a lot. Just that like 1%, like that could be the difference in why he was late on three throws that were all intercepted and why there's like two other throws that very easily could have been intercepted.
And John Mateer had put the ball in harm's way even before he got injured, like Auburn dropped some.
That's the thing.
He could have been.
This is kind of his bag. Like it didn't look like he was physically affected by the thumb. I do buy in more that it's like it was just in the back of his head.
Yeah. And when you're playing in a game of that magnitude, distraction can't help. So the AP poll, we talk about certainly with college football, but the AP poll in basketball is out. The Cougs, number two. They're behind Purdue. Their top five is Florida, the defending national champion, UConn, who had won the previous two, and St. John's. Whoa. In the top five.
Whoa.
That one.
Wow.
Now, I haven't dug deep into St. John's roster because it's October 13th, and there's other things that I'm going to focus on. But when I saw, hey, is this 1985? What is St. John's doing in the top five? Like, I know Rick Pitino's there and all that stuff, but and he's got that program certainly going in the right direction, but to be nationally ranked at top five.
Yeah, they're ahead of Duke and Kentucky.
Yeah.
Like, wow.
And BYU makes the top 10 because of the Bansa. The likely number one overall pick in 2026.
Six.
We're still in 2025. But into Kentucky, 9, Tech at 10. But your Cougs coming in at 2 behind Purdue. Matt Painter.
If only we could see who's the better team. If only they had played.
Well, that was last year's team, Sean.
Yeah. Whatever.
They lost the Cougs last second basket, too. It was a tough game.
Chokers.
Purdue?
Yeah.
And then wait a week or so, and then it was the Cougs?
No.
You don't want to call them chokers. Wait, you want to call Purdue chokers, but not the Cougs.
Yes, that's what I want to do. Okay. I learned from John Granato. I learned from the best that I'm just gonna big up the local team. I'm just going to placate to, you know, whatever gets me the applause. And then what about the bad stuff about that team? Yeah, whatever.
I understand what you're doing because I've listened to him do that for years. I can't call Purdue chokers when what I saw in the final minutes of the title game, which felt like
Duke also chokers.
Well, yes, yes, that was tough for them, and the Cougs benefited from two chokers apparently, according to you. So there it is. The Cougs are going to be great. That's a team. They had their best shot, and I hope it's one of those things where it's not just about the motivation, but, of course, the team is talented enough to get back, and it's just, all right.
It's 2014 Spurs.
Yeah, I hope it's that, where they run through everyone because they realize nothing is given.
Yeah.
All the cliches about how you can't take anything for granted.
More focused team.
Yeah, not to say that they weren't, but just a new level. Like, we're going to have a killer instinct because throughout the tournament, late in the tournament, they're in spots. Now, they came back, had the great comeback against Duke, but you mentioned the Purdue game. They are in spots where I thought that's a team that they could have put away earlier. And just because of how they play their game, sometimes the shots won't go down. And teams got back in. And, of course, the biggest example was the Gators. Nothing like me watching the Gators win a national title and something when the Cougs had their shot to win it. That was tough to watch. We were going to a golf tournament. It was myself and Lance. We were at Highland Pines, which is actually where John is now. We stayed in the hotel because it was such a long drive. And I could hear, because Lance couldn't get his TV to work or something. So his stream
sounds
was
about right.
Faster than mine because of the system that the hotel was using. So I could hear him reacting to things. And then I eventually just had to turn the sound up way louder than I normally would just to drown him out. And thought the Cougs had that one. They didn't, so they'll get back at it here shortly. Highly ranked, another great recruiting class coming in. Kelvin Sampson has built a team that not the program recruits itself, but it is an appealing place to play basketball. And now they're not just getting like the four stars that fit the mold. Now they're getting five stars that Kelvin Sampson believes fits his program. And of course, we know if you don't play D, you don't get on the field. On the court. So that'll be the push and pull. I imagine they've done everything that they need to do to say, all right, yeah, this is a five-star, one of the top 20 players in the country, but he's going to buy in. It gets a little tougher to get that buy-in when the guys legit could say, I could have gone to Duke. I could have gone to Kentucky. All the teams in the top 10 that we just talked about, if they can combine that level of skill with the buy-in that they've gotten from, look, the Cougs have recruited well, but I don't know that they've ever recruited to the level they're recruiting at now. They combine those two things, you can't guarantee anything, but another Final Four appearance very well could be in the offing, and the rankings suggest that that the nation, at least the coaches and the AP, believe they've got a real shot to do that. So number two in the country to start off the season. The only other time they were ranked number two in the country was back in 1967, 68 with Elvin Hayes. And they did get 16 first place votes, but Purdue got 35, which is the difference there. So going to be another good year. Question is, can they get the deal done this time?
Yeah, yeah. I just, Purdue, really?
You don't buy it?
I don't. I really don't buy it. I don't buy it with Purdue. There, I said it.
Coming out strong against Matt Painter.
Do they still have Zach Edey?
No, he's long gone.
Okay. Then what's the big deal anyway?
Who are you?
Robbie Hummel out there?
He's even longer gone.
Etwan Moore? No?
No. It's been a while since all these names you mentioned.
These guys stink then.
I mean, they did play a really competitive Sweet 16 game against
at
the
home,
Cougs last
year.
Yeah, it was in Indy.
Yeah.
Tough for the Cougs to deal with that.
So, what, three points right there? So it was a close but comfortable win for the Cougs.
I don't know.
On a neutral court.
Watching the game, it didn't feel comfortable. It was close. It did not feel comfortable.
Yeah, but it was basically a five-point win.
No, not in the middle of it. When you're watching it, it's not basically a five-point win.
On a neutral court.
Yes, in the hypothetical neutral court where emotions don't matter, it was basically a five-point win. But in the middle of it, it felt like, I can't believe they're going to lose in the Sweet 16 again. That's what it felt like.
No. Uzan got scored on the inbound to cover the spread. That was basically what happened.
No. He did score on the inbound. But he did not cover the spread. Yeah. There were seven.
I mean,
even by your
Kelvin Sampson just coached circles.
Even one by two.
He had a wide open guy for the game winning.
He
play.
Did. That was a great play. It'd be
circle.
And of course, if they had won the title, it would have been part of the hype video and the recap of the Cougs winning that play.
Run.
Yeah. Instead, it ended with not getting a shot. But yes, on that play, Kelvin Sampson won the battle of the
circles.
Coaches.
Circles around him.
But even in your scenario where if it was on a neutral court, it would have been a five-point win, still doesn't cover. They were 7.5-point favorites. On a neutral court, it would have been like 10 or so, according to your math.
No. It's not how much, it's how many.
What?
I don't know.
What are you saying?
You play to win the game.
There it is. There it is. And they did win it. And they won one more. Actually, two more. Just didn't win it all.
He'll be back. I will say they feel like the surest bet in college basketball. Where,
at least a Sweet 16 appearance.
Yes,
and then we'll see what happens after that.
Guarantee you they'll be number one in the country.
At some point.
Like a month.
Purdue
season.
Will drop a game.
Yeah.
And the Cougs will certainly
they'll
be number one at some point.
They'll go, 20-2 in conference play or whatever. However many conference games they play. They'll lose one or two of them.
Yeah. And as it stands now, their first-ranked opponent is 4 weeks in when they play Auburn. They got Tennessee, Arkansas, a lot of SEC as far as ranked opponents. Tennessee, Arkansas, and Auburn. Those are the three ranked opponents as it stands now on
in
their preseason schedule. Yeah, on their their non-conference schedule. And, of course, they get into the bulk of Big 12 play. And, of course, Tech, who I guess will just be good in all things now because they got the money to burn, is their second game in the Big 12 schedule.
They've been good in basketball for a while.
They have been. That is before Mr. Campbell got involved. Tech's been a really good basketball program. We know they played a national title game, played a close one, and lost to, was it Virginia?
Yes, in 2019. They gave Florida all they could handle this year. So.
They had a lead in that one and gave it up because apparently Florida just did that last year.
Yeah, that's just kind of Florida's bag.
That's what they did last year. Unfortunately, the Cougs felt that in the final game of the year. All right. We're done for the day. We'll get into our misery index tomorrow. Certainly, we talked all about college football, but we didn't talk about how miserable some teams are. Penn State would have been on the list, but after they fired James Franklin, it feels like there's a little pep in Penn State's step.
You get a reprieve after you fire.
Yeah, for the most part, the fan base, while respectful, saying, "Hey, we love James, great, all that stuff," but. Time to move on, new chapter, all the blah 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 stuff everyone does. So they won't make it. Maybe the Gators are back on it. Who knows? We'll talk about that tomorrow. Sean, since we're done for the day, what does that mean?
We did it!
We did do it. We'll talk to you tomorrow.